puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Oh boy, let's go exploring again, shall we, with Gordon Goldsborough on the latest episode of Abandoned Manitoba. Gordon's with, of course, the Manitoba Historical Society, always brings us to the most amazing places. Welcome back.
Good morning, Terry.
And where are we going today?
Well, last week I hinted that we were going to be visiting a place where there was an abandoned jailhouse in a farmyard, but that the jailhouse probably wasn't necessary because the prisoners rarely tried to escape. And what I was referring to was something called the Manitoba Industrial Farm, or sometimes actually also called the Prison Farm, located in the rural municipality of Reynolds.
Okay. And where is that exactly?
Well,
remind me where Reynolds is.
It's east in eastern Manitoba. It's about 65 miles east of Winnipeg along the Trans-Canada Highway. The nearest communities, I suppose, would be McMunn on one side of the farm,
yes,
and East Braintree on the other.
Okay, I remember those signs.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's there now?
Well, not a lot. This farm that I'm referring to goes way back. It was actually established in mid-1918, so almost 100 years ago. And much of it was actually made out of wood. In fact, the area even today is heavily forested. And so to build any kind of building there, typically the way you do that is just cut logs and make a build a building. So, of course, buildings like that don't tend to last. But there are in that area buildings that were of more permanent material. There was, for example, a quarry nearby here where they quarried granite. So there was a source of stone. But the building where they actually processed the granite was made out of bricks. So there was a source of bricks too. So,
so what actually went on there?
At the prison farm?
Yeah.
Well, what it was, I think, was this was, of course, think about this. This is long before other sort of facilities existed for incarceration of prisoners. The Headingley Jail, for example, had not yet been built.
Oh, it hadn't.
No. Okay. So anyone who had transgressed, if you were in the jail here in Winnipeg, for example, the one that was widely used was the Vaughan Street Jail, just here in central Winnipeg.
A lovely place.
Indeed. And if it got a little overcrowded, they need a place to send some of the, I guess, less rowdy prisoners. And this way, the idea here was that this was quite a ways from Winnipeg. In fact, there wasn't really much anything there at the time. There was something called the Dawson Road, which was a very primitive road. You wouldn't typically go very far.
That had come from the lakehead, in fact.
That's right, yeah. To get here.
Mm-hmm.
But just recently, they had begun constructing a railway, the Greater Winnipeg Water District Railway.
I wondered, yes. Okay.
Yeah, because that's what they needed to construct the aqueduct that supplies Winnipeg with its water supply. So there was a railway now, but the area was still very remote. So the idea was you could send prisoners out to this remote area, and there wasn't really much likelihood of them escaping because, frankly, it was a long way from anywhere. If they weren't properly clothed, particularly in the wintertime, they wouldn't get very far. Of course, there were presumably lots of insects, mosquitoes and black flies and so on. I guess the assumption is that this was so far away that the chances of them ever escaping was pretty near nil.
How many inmates were there at its peak?
Well, I don't know exactly. The records are very sketchy. I have seen records as many as maybe a dozen, but I've also heard rumors that there may have been as many as 40 or 50 prisoners, but that may have been over a cumulative period.
What did they do there? It was called a prison farm, but did they farm? They wouldn't have farmed, right?
Well, actually, that was the intention. It is not an area you would think of farming today.
That's why I said that.
Fairly heavily forested. But the thinking was that you would put these prisoners to work. In fact, that's how you would engage them. That's how you would prevent them from running away, as they'd be too busy working. So the very first order of business was to clear the land. So they would cut the trees down. There was, say, heavily forested. And in fact, that wood they cut down was then shipped by the railway into Winnipeg. In fact, apparently the first winter, they heated many of the government buildings here in Winnipeg with timber cut by these prisoners. Once they had cleared the land, of course, then they could farm it. And so they brought in farm machinery. They brought in livestock. So they actually physically could farm. And of course, the thinking there was not only to give them useful skills, but also so they could raise their own food. You know, the assumption being is they wanted to make this facility as self-reliant as they could. And then, of course, the third thing they had to do was make themselves shelter. So with some of the timbers they had cut down, they built buildings. But then as time went on and they had maybe a little more time on their hands because they had cut most of the trees down, then they began building more permanent buildings. So in fact, there were, in addition to the timber buildings, at least three fairly robust buildings made out of, well, a very eclectic mixture. These buildings, even though they're still standing today, and you can see that they're mixed of granite, which is the predominant rock in that area, but also a little bit of limestone. and then bricks that they had scavenged from this brick building over at the quarry.
What kind of shape is it in now?
Well, those three stone and brick buildings are still in remarkably good condition. In fact, there's an interesting story in itself. They started to build a residence for the superintendent of the prison, and they didn't get finished. By the time the facility closed, I said it opened in 1918, and by the time they closed in 1930, they closed, by the way, because now Headingley Jail had been constructed, and I think they just felt that it was a better facility for the sort of work they needed to do. So they actually transferred the prisoners, the guards, the farm equipment, the farm animals got shipped to Headingley, and they left behind these buildings. So one of them, as I say, was a house for the superintendent of the prison. It wasn't finished by the time they actually left the site. The walls had been mostly done, the exterior walls. And incidentally, those walls were robust. Apparently, they're 26 inches thick. You know, over 2 feet thick. I mean, obviously this was a building built to last, but it wasn't finished. So it sat there from 1930 when they left the site up until 1967. And by that time, there was actually apparently a big tree growing in the middle of it because the roof wasn't on. It just grew right up out of the top of the building. And the people who had purchased the land after the prison farm had vacated, I guess their descendants, or maybe it was another owner perhaps, decided they would actually finish it. So in 1967, they finished the building. They put interior walls in it. They put a roof on it. And those same people are living in that building still today.
They're still there.
They're still there.
Wow.
They appreciate the historical significance of this site because in addition to finishing this superintendent's house, they also have made renovations to the jailhouse. Now, there was a jailhouse on the site, which, as I mentioned before, didn't hardly seem necessary because people really couldn't escape any practical way. But I guess occasionally they would have, you know, infractions. People would do things that they should be punished for. And so they did have a small brick jailhouse. Bricks probably, again, scavenged from that quarry. And it had bars on the windows. It had bars on the doors. In fact, the assistant superintendent of the jail, a fellow named August Anderson, he was also a blacksmith. So he had actually made the bars for the windows and doors of the jailhouse. And they would incarcerate people there. Well, the current owners have restored that and have put a new roof on it to keep it dry. So it's in remarkable state of preservation, the jailhouse, which is interesting in itself because you go in there, it's clear that the prisoners had some time on their hands. And so they inscribed the bricks inside the jail cells in various ways. They would put their name. They put the length of their sentence. Usually it's only a few days. They put things like, well, a couple of cases I noticed there was the Masonic symbol. Presumably the prisoners were Masons. There was an imprint of a beaver. An imprint of a bison. One of the most interesting ones was a man holding a pistol with the words "stick 'em up" above him. So, I would assume they're relating stories from their past, perhaps. So, and these are all preserved on the walls of this jailhouse on this farm. So that's remarkable. And then there's an old barn that they built for the livestock. They had cattle, they had hogs, and they built a large barn out of the same sort of combination of materials as for the superintendent's house. So it too is a sort of a mixture of stone, brick, and a few timbers, and it's standing as well. So there are a few remnants that you can still see, but say the other buildings, the wooden ones, they're long gone.
How did you discover this place?
Well, as it happens, I was contacted by a listener, you know, someone who had heard our program and said, you know, I have a site you'd like to see. And a few weeks back, I went out and met her and took me to the site. It turns out she's a descendant of that blacksmith, the fellow who made the bars. And one of her cousins, in fact, owns the site today. So it was because of this show, I think, that I got to see this wonderful facility.
Can we visit the place?
Well, I don't think so, not unless you make arrangements ahead of time. The people that own it would prefer for people to make arrangements. Now, if people are interested in seeing it, I can certainly try to put them in touch. I can put them in touch with the person who showed me the site, and then she can see whether it's possible. But it is worth seeing. You know, there is, in fact, an interesting connection to Winnipeg of this site as well. Of course, many of the prisoners themselves might have come from Winnipeg too. And in fact, there's the interesting part. People, of course, will remember that in 1919, we had the Winnipeg General Strike here in the city. And in the aftermath of that, a few of the leaders of that strike were were charged, were convicted, and were sent to prison. Now, there's a very famous picture of these strike leaders that shows them standing in front of a building. And for years, people thought this building was at Stony Mountain Penitentiary. Well, some research done by one of my friends determined that it wasn't at Stony Mountain this picture was taken. It was actually over in front of the Vaughan Street Jail, which makes sense because that would have been the first place they would have sent these prisoners. Well, but then they had to send them to some place for a little longer retention because the Vaughan Street Jail was really more for sort of temporary holding. Well, the place they sent them, people claim they went to the Stony Mountain Penitentiary, but I don't think that's true because, you know, that was a maximum security facility. And these guys, you know, were not, you know, hardened criminals. In fact, many people have argued they are heroes. So in fact, they were sent to the prison farm, which makes perfect sense. There weren't any fences. I mean, there wasn't really any way of containing them, but because they didn't have to, and these guys probably would fit right in. So many of the strike leaders from the Winnipeg General Strike served their time at this prison farm.
It's fascinating that the current owners have restored it to its former, not its former uses, but to the integrity of the buildings as they were built.
Well, I think they realized just the historical significance of this site. And that's good to see because unfortunately, a lot of sites that we've visited along the way in this series are not well maintained. And as a result, they don't look very good.
You may have to change the name of the series from Abandoned Manitoba to Restored Manitoba.
That's right.
Nicely done. So where are you taking us next week?
Well, you know, Terry, oftentimes I leave you with a very cryptic clue, and it often doesn't ring true with anybody. They don't understand what it means. So I think this case, I can talk about a site, and I can just by go out and just telling you what it is, because you'll have probably never heard of it. We're going to next week go to a place called Roughton.
You're right. Haven't heard of it.
And it's easily the hardest place I have ever gone to in this series of places that we're visiting.
And I know you've visited some pretty difficult to get to places.
This one beats them all.
Great stuff, Gordon. Great to see you.
We'll see you next week.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.